Coming up on Tech News Today, Apple announces its next iPhone event, and it's happening the day before its other iPhone event in court with the FBI. Sonos has Amazon Echo MV. Speaking of the Echo, Farhad Manjoo tells us why he thinks it's such a transformative device, how to manage digital information overload in your life, and so much more. Tech News Today is next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1467, recorded Thursday, March 10th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at freshbooks.com/TNT.
And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT.
And by the Ring video doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Right now, get free expedited FedEx shipping when you go to Ring.com/TNT.
Hello, and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about the tech news with people who say funny things on Twitter about technology all the time.
Including us.
Sometimes. I don't say funny things. Our guest does. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. And this is Alexa. See what just happened there? Joining us. Yeah, she's not our guest. Sorry, Alexa. Stand down. Introducing Steve Kovac from TechInsider.io. How's it going, Steve?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. It's great to have you here. Tell people a little bit about Tech Insider and kind of what they can find, the work you're doing over there.
Yeah, so Tech Insider is the first news site, same company that brought you Business Insider over the last several years. We're a little bit different. We cover strictly tech from the consumer side. We also cover science, innovation, and digital culture. So techinsider.io.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. One of my daily reads. Thank you. All right. So should we start?
Let's start with the news?
Yeah. It appears that once again, my invitation to Apple's event on March 21st has gotten lost in the mail. Have you gotten yours yet, Steve?
Yeah, I got mine around noon today. And so I'll be out there.
Excellent. And then you're going to be doing Twit the day before, too. So you can make all the crazy predictions you want. And they may or may not come true on Monday.
I think we pretty much know by this point what's going to happen. But what I'm really curious about is if they talk about this FBI case at all on the stage. I mean, just not even an hour ago, there was another call with reporters with Apple's lead lawyer in this case. And they just blasted the Justice Department after this other filing they put through. So it's going to be really interesting to see if there's any kind of effect on this product launch, if they what they say, what they talk about, if they address it at all. I'm more curious about that, to be honest, than I am about a new iPhone or a new iPad.
Maybe there is no regular day of the week that this normally happens, but if I had to pick in my mind, I would say it normally happens Tuesdays, Wednesdays. Has there ever been an Apple event on a Monday? That feels kind of different to me.
Maybe not in recent memory, but yeah, you're right. It's usually Tuesday or Wednesday. But I think Tuesday the 22nd is when they'll be in court.
Right,
so
exactly.
I think Tim Cook's going to be a little bit busy on that Tuesday to announce a new iPhone.
They had other plans.
But originally it was March 15th and they moved it up. So I have to believe that they moved it up in order to talk about it.
Right, and that's what a lot of people have speculated, that maybe they purposely pushed it a week after they originally intended to do it. Just so they could kind of give everyone like wind up ahead of this court case. They are really fighting this thing. I mean, I get emails from them and the rest of the press gets emails from Apple just about every day, if not multiple times a day. They're really building this case out in public against the FBI. It's very interesting to see this battle play out. And it'll be even more interesting if they do it on stage at a major, you know, Apple product launch when everyone's watching on a live stream. That's going to be really interesting to see.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention, Apple's really good with, you know, there's always a lot of mystique around kind of an Apple announcement, right? And a lot of attention is given to their announcements, not just the day of, but it kind of in some ways defines the week when you're talking about the tech press. So if it was a week prior, you can kind of see how their announcement would have its time, but then it would totally fade out and all eyes would be on the case. At least this way, it allows them to maybe kind of control that week a little bit more, put out their products, you know, really get a lot of eyeballs on there, whether they want people to be totally focused on the case or not. Kind of puts them a little bit more control over that aspect.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so if anyone hasn't been following them, they are allegedly going to release the smaller iPhone. It's the size of an iPhone 5. It has the rounded curves of the 6. Some of the 6S features like live photos, and I don't think 3D touch. That I think we figured out that that's not going to be part of it. But maybe a hands-free Siri. So yeah, I mean, do you think that they would say anything about encryption not talking about the case, but saying about like they're going to be changing the encryption, talking about that at all? Do you think
I could totally see them like making a point to like, and it also has encryption, like right out of the box or something, really punctuating that. I don't know, I could kind of see it.
Which isn't a new thing for any iPhone. I mean, it's built into the iOS, so I mean, they don't really have to say it, but they might just do a little wink and a nod.
Exactly.
I'm curious if they're going to do anything more specific than that. And, you know, they have this really clear philosophy about these things. And mm-hmm. I wonder if they're going to hammer that even more.
Sure. So as we're leading up to the hearing, it's March 22nd, the day after the iPhone event, the Justice Department is filing new motions that further define its position in the San Bernardino case. Today's 43-page filing is interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, the DOJ states that Apple's creating a diversion that's forcing the discussion to focus on encryption when the DOJ is still just talking about one device. But, Steve, there have been cases revealed recently that kind of illustrate their desire to access many more than just this one phone if they do win. Is that right?
Yeah, it's really hard to buy it. I mean, if you want to be a cynic, and I probably lean more towards this end of the argument, that they picked a high-profile case. It happened to be a terrorist case where there's a lot of passions on both sides about it to really bring this forward. There are at various levels of law enforcement. There are tons of iPhones that they would just love to get inside and take a peek at. And, you know, they've even said, I mean, people, at all levels of law enforcement have said they would love to have some sort of precedent where they can get into a smartphone to access that kind of data. And this would be a huge win for the FBI if they could do it. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, I think this is like the perfect case, and they chose it. They being the FBI chose it very deliberately when there are a lot of passions to both sides, middle of an election cycle, where you have people screaming on each side of the debate. You have Donald Trump calling for a boycott of Apple. So, I mean, there are a lot. They can just tap into that emotion, I guess, around this case a lot more than they could of, say, just some no-name drug dealer or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. Now, they also say that nowhere in the DOJ anyway says that nowhere in the order is it stated that the code that Apple would have to write would ever need to leave Apple's hands. In other words, their iOS level corrections would still rest safely in the hands of Apple. Is that accurate, Steve? What is the greater harm in that case?
Well, the greater harm, again, it's that precedent thing I was talking mm-hmm. about. You know, it sets a standard moving forward that the government can make these requests, and they know they can get it. And so, you know, this is a very high profile case, but what's to stop them from doing it on a case where they might not necessarily need it? Mm-hmm. And even they have admitted that, hey, the phone might have nothing on it. You know what I mean? And then there's also the aspect of it where, you know, they admitted they screwed up. They resetted the account before when they had a chance to have access to it, and Apple could have helped them that way. So now this is, you know, again, if you want to take the cynical view on the FBI's position on this, they chose a high profile case with a lot of emotion tied to it. to get what they want and set this precedent moving forward.
And yet they're the ones that are saying that in this briefing or that they did today, they're the ones saying that Apple is using scare tactics. That's what I found so interesting. They said that Apple's rhetoric is corrosive and that they're using scare tactics. When from their filing, it says they talk about evidence related to the terrorist mass murder of 14 Americans. Like, you know, just using that, that's not, I mean, that's also, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty scary, right?
Yeah.
You know, the implication there is Apple is tacitly enabling terrorism, I guess, and that's kind of scary. But there's a greater, you know, the argument goes, it's like, why would they worry about it if there's nothing to hide? Well, it's like, it's the same reason why you send, you know, birthday cards in the mail and still put them in an envelope, right? You don't want people reading that. There's still like a level of privacy to everything. But yeah, both sides are waging a massive PR campaign. Like I said, Apple is reaching out to the press several times a day, at least once a day. And then the FBI comes out with these statements, you know, maybe once a week, every 10 days. So there is this battle playing in the public, and then we're going to finally start seeing it play in the court. And all this public battle we're seeing is going to inform what we see in a week and a half in court.
Right. Now, touching a little bit on what you were just talking about a few minutes ago, Steve, about the iCloud backup, one of Apple's big claims so far is that the government, like you said, somehow reset the iCloud backup on the device. And had that not happened, the Department of Justice would have had access to the data that they're looking for. The DOJ is now saying that Farouk, the terrorist who owned the phone, had actually disabled the system and changed his password after the last backup. That last backup happened 6 weeks prior to the San Bernardino attacks. Would this put the lie to the theory that the DOJ's password reset actually had a huge impact for their potential to getting at that data?
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it is possible. And there was it 6 weeks or something?
Yeah.
There's six weeks, like there could have been some kind of message or something in there. And actually, Apple really hasn't addressed that, so that's kind of interesting that they haven't said anything like address that specific counter argument to what they came out. They dropped that bombshell. What was it? 3 weeks ago or 2.5 weeks ago? Like, you know, the FBI screwed up and reset this password. And then Apple kind of like buried its head after that revelation came out, the 6 weeks thing. So I'm curious to hear what Apple's responses to that, because we haven't really got anything clear on that.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's Apple's response, and you know, there's the DOJ's response, and then there's all of us tech press sort of, you know, muddling some things up sometimes in the middle, and the regular press too. I mean, I think also like people that don't understand encryption saying things that may or may not be true, and then, you know, so many of us that are in the tech press who not just that we're all Apple fans, but that we understand the importance of privacy, and it's something we think about and talk about all day. And when someone just says like, well, what's the big deal, open the terrorist's phone, like, you know, we understand why that's not where it ends.
The greater implication.
Well, moving on, if you have money to burn and you don't like leaving your house and you love movies, Facebook and Napster co-founder Sean Parker has an idea for you. Variety says The Screening Room is Parker's new project that will allow you to buy a $150 set-top box and pay $50 every time you want to see a movie in your house. But you can see it the day that the movie opens in the theaters. When I first saw this, I thought, oh, that sounds like a lot. But then I really did the math. And $50 is less than the cost of taking my entire family to the movies now. No more kid tickets for me, for my children once they hit 11. So, yeah, it doesn't, I don't know. I like my house. I like watching movies on my couch. What do you guys think?
I like that, too. It could be a whole lot worse. There is a company, actually, called Prima Cinema. They've been doing this for a few years now. Totally, I mean, based on the price, totally targeted at people who have a lot of money to blow. $35,000 for the player. That comes with a 2 terabyte hard drive. And, of course, a whole lot of DRM baked into it. Movies run $500 to $600, depending on if it's just, you know, a standard movie or a 3D movie. And it includes a fingerprint scanner to make sure that the person who's authorized to watch is there at that moment to watch the movie that you're watching. So it could be a heck of a lot worse. I think this is a bargain compared to Prima Cinema.
What do you think?
Yeah, and I don't know how they're going to convince the movie studios to allow this. Really, maybe they can say we're going to scale like crazy and you guys are going to make gobs of money. But you can bet the theater chains are going to fight this like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, that $500 is, you know, about what a normal like movie theater would pay the studio. So the studios are probably okay with that. The $50, it's about the same as when you go to the theater with a bunch of people and popcorn and so forth. But it is where things are going. I mean, theaters are trying to invent different ways to get people to come because people are staying home more and watching Netflix and streaming and pirating, to be honest. And so you're starting to see theaters kind of adapt to that. You know, the places where you can go and order a beer now, mm-hmm. or reclining seats or assigned seats to really differentiate themselves from being at home. But I wouldn't be shocked if in 10 or 15 years, a service like this is pretty common and going to the theater is more of a commodity than anything. You only go for really special things.
So, I only go for the popcorn now.
Oh, really? See, I like the theater experience. I used to work in a movie theater. Like it has a soft place in my heart for the movie theater experience. So I do hope that stuff like this doesn't end up kind of bookstoring movie theaters.
Amazon.
And now suddenly you have to really try, you know, super hard to even find one bookstore around. You know, I hope that doesn't happen to movie theaters.
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, people are doing, by and large, where there's a will, there's a way. And people mm-hmm. are doing this already. So maybe there needs to be, an actual way to do this that doesn't cost $35,000 just to kind of like get through the door.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So no deals have been made. They say they have,
right.
They're close to sealing a deal with AMC. And part of that also is that you get 2 free tickets for every movie that you buy. Tickets. Like, not theater
tickets.
That
sweetens the deal a lot,
tickets.
Actually.
Yeah. So that you eat the popcorn.
Interesting. Sonos has had a nice run in the music streaming hardware game for some time. Their hardware is top notch. We've got it around here at the studio. People have been willing to pay a premium price to get it. But based on its announcement today, it's, quote, letting go of some employees. That's their words. It seems like times might be changing. John McFarlane, he's the CEO of Sonos, said in a blog post that the company plans to double down on music streaming, but also implement Amazon Echo-like features into the Sonos world, plans to integrate things like voice commands into the experience. Is this enough to save Sonos? Are they actually in trouble, or are they just kind of refocusing their efforts? What do you think, Steve?
I don't think they're in trouble at all. First of all, they own this market. Name one competitor, Sonos. You really can't. And they were so far ahead. The company's 12 or 13 years old. They knew streaming was going to be big before you and I really knew it was going to be big. They make the best, really just amazing sounding speakers. For the super audiophiles, we'll probably have problems with them. But for someone like you and me, it's perfect. $200 and it fills your house with sound. But what I've always admired about this company, they do look forward a lot. Like, they looked forward 13 years ago to streaming. Now they're looking forward. They take a look at Amazon and the success of the Echo and this budding concept of your home as a platform and talking to these inanimate objects and getting what you want. And they realize, wow, this is a thing. And if we don't jump on it now, we're going to be way behind in a few years, and Amazon can run away with this market. And by the way, there's nothing stopping Sonos from using Alexa. They can put Alexa inside a Sonos, a future Sonos speaker. So it's an open platform that anybody can adopt. So I wouldn't be surprised, a year or so from now, we see something like that.
Right. I mean, we're going to talk a little bit about the Echo after the break, but I thought some of the stories I read today about this were kind of saying, oh, well, they missed the boat. Sonos missed the boat. The Echo is the way. These voice control devices are the way, and they've fallen behind. But it's really, I mean, I think Amazon came out of nowhere with this, and no one expected it. And I think Sonos is responding at an appropriate time to this, and they could certainly come in there. I mean, I'm not an audiophile, so the speaker is just fine for me in the Echo, but I know a lot of people that's their complaint. So you're right. If they could combine the two, it would be amazing for a lot of people.
I agree.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I will say that, in our house, we always wanted to get a Sonos, but it was always just kind of like, just a little bit out of reach monetarily to like make the decision and pull the trigger. And then a little device came along last year called the Chromecast Audio. And it does a lot. I mean, it does a fair amount of what the Sonos does in regards to syncing multiple speakers throughout your house into the same, let's say, playlist or whatever, you know, so you plug it into speakers you already have. It costs $35. That's the big difference. The Sonos really does kind of target a different price bracket. But now there are options that are kind of coming into the marketplace that bring some of that kind of advanced connectivity between all of your speakers and syncing them to the same signal wirelessly between them. That's suddenly very, very achievable at a much lower price. So, yeah, they need to kind of keep redefining themselves. And they've always been pretty forward-thinking, so this makes perfect sense. All right. We're going to talk more about the Echo, actually, up next with Farhad Manjoo. He's going to tell us what he thinks about the Amazon Echo and why it's such a transformative device. But before that, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode. That's FreshBooks. If you're a freelancer, you're a small business, you're feeling stressed out by stacks of receipts, spreadsheet formatting nightmares, not enough time to deal with all that crazy stuff, we've got a solution that will help you out. It's called FreshBooks. Our friends at FreshBooks have created just an easy-to-use cloud accounting software that makes dealing with your taxes way less taxing. Getting started on FreshBooks could not be easier, even if you're not a numbers person. I know I'm not a numbers person. You can create and send invoices efficiently, plus you'll get paid online. And that's done super quick with the FreshBooks payments. You also have the option to request a deposit in FreshBooks and get paid up front. So no more covering costs out of your pocket or no more waiting until the end of a project to wait to get paid. And they've made it incredibly easy for you to track your billable time. FreshBooks recently announced their new EMV chip card enabled card reader. So you can accept credit cards wherever business happens to take you easily, quickly, and securely with their entirely redesigned iPhone app. Plus, you can create awesome, beautiful invoices in just seconds. With FreshBooks, you can focus on what you love most, and that's growing your business. And wonder why you didn't start sooner with FreshBooks. All right, getting started is simple. It's totally free for 30 days. Go to freshbooks.com/TNT. And don't forget to enter Tech News Today in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Start your 30-day free trial today. And we thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode of Tech News Today. All right, joining us now is Farhad Manjoo from the New York Times. How's it going, Farhad?
Hey, good. How are you?
Excellent. It's great to have you here. We also brought a friend of yours, Alexa's here at the table with us.
Great.
Alexa, say hi.
I'm a huge fan of Alexa.
You wrote an article today on the impact that Amazon's Echo has had in your life since it was released a little more than a year ago. Let's just say that you are obviously a big fan. I do not have one myself, but I'm more and more intrigued, especially after reading your words kind of, you know, in that discussion. You put it on the same level as the iPhone, more or less, as a device that kind of opened up your world to a new level of kind of technological influence, let's say. How did that happen for you?
Well, I think what's similar to it, what's similar to the iPhone is that this is a brand new platform with a new interface. So what was new about the iPhone was that it had this touchscreen interface in a way that you'd never sort of knew before. And then suddenly you have this mobile computer and you could do a bunch of things. Like, it was a general purpose computer that you could use everywhere you went. This is similar, not in its functionality, but sort of in its promise, right? Like, it's a brand new interface. We've had voice devices before, but we really haven't had voice devices without screens before. This is completely, like, all of your interactions are done by voice. You know, she speaks to you and you speak to it. It's not like how Siri works, which is it shows you a response on the screen. You kind of have to be looking at it to use it. That's not true of Alexa. And it's also a platform. Like, they're adding a bunch of developers that are creating apps for it, and they're also allowing Alexa, this persona, to be used as a service in other hardware. So, you know, at some point you'll be able to use Alexa in your car or in other devices around your house. So it's really, they're going for this sort of expansive play where you can imagine that at some point you'll be able to do a bunch of things with it. Probably not in outside. It's probably not like a mobile device just because you have to talk to it, but in kind of stationary settings in your house and maybe at work, and probably in your car, you will have this sort of computer that you only interact with by voice, and then it'll be able to do a bunch of things for you.
One thing I can tell you right now about a computer that's activated by your voice is that if you have it just hanging out, it randomly turns on when it hears certain things.
When it hears its name, right?
Yeah. So probably not great for the workplace where you're talking about it a lot.
But I mean, at a certain point, you could imagine this kind of technology getting built and you know, processed to a point to where it was smarter than that, or at least you would hope so, because the potential is really there for this to kind of improve everything, right?
Alexa is not a word that you say frequently other than when you're going to address it. So other than when you're like doing a segment on an Amazon product, right, you're not going to say it a lot. So they chose that wisely. Yeah. I don't feel like I randomly trigger it often, but you know, I have wondered what it would be like if like your name was actually Alexa. I think you can change the trigger word actually, but.
Yeah, only to Amazon.
Change to Amazon. Yeah, Amazon.
Only to Amazon. Right. What about you, Steve? Are you a fan? Do you have an Alexa at home?
I used to. Oh, it's not going off when you just said it.
I turned it off.
Oh, you turned it off. Right.
Yeah, we decided we were going to like live by the fact that we always set off other like listeners and people that watch the show their devices. So we're like, well, we're going to, you know, it's our own poison. And after the first time it happened, we're like, okay, we can't do this. So it's off. So,
anyway, I had one. I tested one that Amazon sent me to try out and review or whatever. And I loved it. Like I had it for about a month. And then when I got rid of it to send it back to Amazon, I got myself in this habit of walking in the door and telling it what music I want to listen to. And then I like almost missed it. It was like a girlfriend left me or something. And like, I was so used to having this companion with me and like helping me out, and it was gone. And I ended up, instead of buying one for myself, the only thing that kept me from buying it, this was last fall. It didn't have Spotify integration at the time. And I'm a major Spotify user. And that was literally the only thing, holding me back from, buying that, or I ended up buying a Sonos. And then sure enough, what, about a month ago or so, they announced that they have Spotify integration. Mm-hmm. So now I have big time regret.
I gotta say, it's
just superior.
The Spotify integration has just made it like a much, much better device. It is sort of like it has become like the killer app for it, because before it had Prime Music, which just didn't have a lot of stuff. And Spotify has just made it sort of a much more useful device. And Steve mentioned Sonos. So I have several Sonos. I have like a multi-room Sonos thing, and I just never use it anymore. Like it used to feel really, really easy to find a song on the Sonos app. Like you could do it in a matter of minutes. And that felt like great. Like you had access to all of the world's music, and it was just like a few minutes away. But now that feels like just ancient. Like it just feels really like a trudge to kind of go through the app and get a song, when you can with Echo just like ask for it and it'll start playing. Like literally in under 10 seconds you'll have a song. So that just seems so much better.
So Farhad, you talked about how its promise is it's a platform and it keeps getting improved, and that's amazing. Some people see that as a negative. They call it, you know, it's a Trojan horse in your house. Like it's this thing that Amazon can add things to at any time. What do you make of that?
Well, I will say it is, I expected that to be the case. I expected it to be like basically like a front end for Amazon Store. And I don't think it's really that. Like it's surprising actually. The store is not integrated that much into Alexa, like especially at first. They've added some more stuff. So now if you've ordered something from Amazon in the past, you can say reorder and then it'll send it to you, which is actually a really handy feature if you shop from Amazon often. But that is not, I don't find that my interactions with Amazon as a retailer like are a huge part of the of Echo. And I think that's obviously what people are worried about. I mean, another big worry is that it's an invasion of privacy, although I really fail to see how it's a bigger invasion of privacy than your smartphone, which is like also a device that has an always-on microphone and cameras, and it's one that you take with you everywhere, and you're surrounded by other people's smartphones, and you're not like no one's bringing their own Alexa, their own Echo to record you. Like this is in your own house, and your smartphone's already recording you, so I don't think it's like a bigger privacy invasion. And as far as like it being a platform, Amazon has been pretty open with this platform. You know, pretty much anyone can create an app for it, and there are actually a whole bunch of like in the early days of the App Store or the iOS App Store, there's a lot of dumb apps for it, and then there's a handful of useful ones. I heard of there's a bank that's going to come out with an app soon that, you know, if you have a account at that bank. You can just ask it for like your balance for your checking account or your credit card, or ask when your bill's due. Like, those kinds of things are really useful. They're the kinds of things you do on your phone already, but you can imagine doing them much more quickly with a device like this.
Yeah, you might.
And it seems like developers are being smarter with it too. Like, you look at the Apple Watch and the apps on there, they're just trying to shrink down little smartphone apps onto like an even smaller screen. And there's no real use case for that kind of form factor. Whereas with the Amazon, the Echo, it totally makes sense. You walk into your house, you use your voice, you set a timer, you say, hey, call me an Uber, you say, hey, order me a pizza. That's just awesome. It's very Star Trek-ish. And it seems like whatever Amazon is doing on the developer relations side is working way better than what, you know, Apple has done with that, communicating that kind of platform to, than Apple has done with the watch.
Well, the order a pizza is when you, that's when you get to realize like where the advertising comes in, because you can only order a Domino's pizza. For now.
Yes,
for now.
Right. There's nothing stopping Pizza Hut from doing it, or Papa John's from integrating. Yeah. I mean, anyone can integrate into it.
Right. I mean, I think there are some apps that have been given sort of like like a higher profile in the Alexa app, and sort of been added as like a first class member of the service. So like Uber, for example, like they've really promoted the fact that you can order an Uber through it. It's something they added recently. And I think it's the result of some sort of negotiation with Uber, but I'm sure that Lyft could create its own app. It just might not be as prominent. Like, and that's sort of, where some of these deals in marketing might come in. But I think part of it is that, I mean, from what I could tell talking to them, they're really stretched thin with this device. Like, they have a lot of demand for new services, and you can tell that, you know, it's only about a year old, and you can tell that they're trying to add a lot of stuff very quickly, but they've been surprised by the popularity, and they've been surprised by sort of how much users want from it. And so they're sort of trying to do a lot in a little time with this device.
Well, so you brought up the popularity. Do you think that they're artificially controlling it? Because I know with the especially the new devices, there's the Echo Dot and the Amazon Tap. So the Echo Dot is the small one that connects to your better speakers, and then the Tap is the portable one. And you brought up the fact that you don't walk around listening to people. And so the portable one, smartly, you have to press the button in order to speak to it. So it's not constantly listening to you and everyone around you. But they're really hard to order. I mean, the Dot, you can't order unless you have an Amazon Echo already. And then there was a workaround, but then that, you know, Amazon took that away. Are they artificially trying to control how many devices are in the wild?
I think they're just releasing it slowly. I mean, from what I know, like the Echo itself, I think they seem to be having a hard time making enough. Like, it's sold out often on Amazon. It's selling for a premium on eBay. Amazon is not. I mean, they've made Kindle for a while, but they're not. I don't think they're used to scaling up hardware this quickly. I mean, it's just a very young device. And in terms of the Echo Dot release is a little odd, but they've always sort of been a little bit experimental with how they release devices. I mean, the first Echo, I mean, it was hard to get in the early days. You had to sign up to this waiting list, and you had to be part of Prime and sign up to this list. I didn't get a review device. I ordered one, and it took like at least 5 months to ship. So they have sort of, I don't know if it's deliberately because they don't know if their service can handle scale or what, but they've, you know, tried to limit this release, and it might just be they can't make enough, or they can't service all those many people. It's also just that it's new and they're experimenting with it, and it might be that they just want it to remain this sort of like beta type app for a while. Although they have run Super Bowl ads for it, they are trying to sell a lot, so they're not, it's not that small.
Yeah. The thing that I wonder about is how tied to the success of the Echo is Amazon, just as a company that's obviously behind it and created it and all that kind of stuff. But we know that other people are kind of working on this kind of technology. Do you think it's easily replicable? Well, there we go. Whatever that word is.
So one of the things I think is really interesting about the Echo is that it is a device made by a company that I really think that it, like, sort of the impetus of this device is that they don't have a smartphone. They don't have a popular smartphone, and so they needed to create some other thing. I mean, they obviously tried to create a smartphone, and it failed. This is a device that, like, tries to leapfrog the smartphone, or at least tries to find some other new platform. And I really think, I mean, I don't think it's conscious, but I think that this explains why Google and Apple didn't think of this device. Like, they have all the talent in making this device, and they have a platform to create it on, right? Like Siri, you could imagine Siri doing this, and they could just add it to the Apple TV, and you could imagine Google doing it with Nest or with their new router or with any number of other devices. They have sort of the voice recognition and other technologies to do it. But I think it's the fact that Amazon did it was because, like, they didn't have this key, they didn't have this lock into your life, right? Like, they didn't have a smartphone and they needed something else. I'm sure that Apple and Google, like, especially if this succeeds, if Echo succeeds, I'm sure they'll try to replicate it. And it doesn't seem that hard to replicate, but, you know, Amazon is, like, more than a year ahead here. Yeah. So there is that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Farhad Manjoo, tell people, first of all, thank you so much for coming on and talking about all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Really appreciate having you here. Tell people where they can follow all your stuff online.
The New York Times and Twitter. F Manjoo at Twitter.
F Manjoo and Twitter.
Thank
awesome.
You.
Thank you, Farhad.
Thanks.
All right, we have an email. Murray Ellis writes about our discussion of Google's new hands-free payment app from a few days ago that they're testing out south of San Francisco. He writes, quote, comments on your show indicated that Apple Pay is a pain because you still have to enter your PIN at times after using Apple Pay, and how great it is that Google is doing hands-free. However, the host, that's us, should have noted that an additional PIN requirement is a bank requirement and has nothing to do with Apple Pay. If your Google hands-free payment uses a bank card that requires a PIN, you'll still need a PIN. If the payment goes through the Google account that contains cash, then you need to make sure you have some of your money stored in the Google account where you'll be using voice, which is a bigger pain than just using an Apple Pay card that doesn't require a PIN. As hosts, Jason, Megan, you two need to ask the hard questions about why do we really need this technology, which is a very good question. Even if it's a great idea, asking this pushes the discussion further on the true path of the technology. I don't know if we ever need technology,
no.
But we like technology, and this sounds really cool. That's my answer.
Steve, what do you think about the Google's hands-free? I mean, I'm sure you haven't used it because it's only south of San Francisco, but is that something you think we need?
Just to walk in and be able to pay?
Say, I'll pay with Google.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I mean, Square tried something similar, and that that seemed like so magical at the time that you kind of walk in and you don't even have to worry about it. Like, that's almost too futuristic, I guess. But as long as it's safe, I don't have any problem with that. I think it's kind of cool. And if it takes away the act of, like, whipping out your phone or something or a credit card, then I think that's neat. I don't know if it's going to totally revolutionize anything, but it's a cool experiment.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder how seamless it would actually be in practice, too, which is always my question when it comes to all these new types of payments is it really actually in the long run much simpler than what we are already used to? And I don't know. My experience is 50-50. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it absolutely is not.
Yeah.
What was the thing when Apple Pay was first announced at that event and they made it seem like it was such a hassle to take your credit card out and swipe? It's like, come on, Tim Cook. Like, it's not that much different whipping out your phone versus whipping out a credit card. Mm-hmm. It's cool and it's fun, but it doesn't drastically change anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, Murray was this email was a little bit longer. He was also complaining because I was saying that it's really hard sometimes with my Apple Watch. It's awkward for me to have to put my arm in this particular place. And I realize now that sounds kind of silly. It's what you're saying. It's like, oh, yeah, so I'm paying with my watch, but it has to be perfect. You know, it's awesome to pay with my watch. I should just, you know,
it get it. It always goes back to that whole
sometimes
Louis C.K. thing.
Have to turn it around. Yeah. So
you're getting internet in the sky. Yeah. It's an amazing world we live in.
Yes.
Anyways.
All right. Well, coming up next, find out why the internet makes me wish I was married to Ryan Gosling. But first, let's take a minute to thank ZipRecruiter, the sponsor of this episode. Earlier this week on the show, we were talking about all the jobs that robots make better. One is hiring. So think of ZipRecruiter as your friendly army of hiring robots. Posting jobs in one place is not enough to find quality candidates, and short staffing leaves little time to post to dozens of job sites. ZipRecruiter will automatically send your active jobs to all of their job boards. You don't have to sound like a robot, though. You can create personalized responses when candidates apply. ZipRecruiter has done all the heavy lifting to make you look good and save you time. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites with one single click and be instantly matched to candidates from millions of resumes. Take advantage of integrated social network posting to reach job seekers on Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus. You can add your company logo and your colors to make your job pages an extension of your business. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses, and you can try it now for free. And if you decide to cancel on the billing page before the free trial ends, you will not be charged anything. You can keep whatever candidates you receive. Dan, a happy ZipRecruiter client, said the hardest part about running a business when you need to hire is that you have to spend extra time recruiting while you're short-staffed. But with ZipRecruiter, I have gotten quality candidates within 24 hours of posting a job. ZipRecruiter's website makes this process so much faster by letting me manage candidates in one place. Check out all the other testimonials on ZipRecruiter's websites. Happy customers say ZipRecruiter is a time saver, a money saver, even a lifesaver. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. At ZipRecruiter.com/TNT, and we thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today.
All right. Earlier today, Megan had a chance to interview Manoush Zomorodi from WNYC's Note to Self podcast, a tech show about being human, to talk about digital information overload. Let's take a look at your interview.
So a few weeks ago, you undertook an experiment to help people deal with information overload or infomania. Yes. Tell us about what you did.
Okay, so what we'd heard from a lot of our listeners was this idea that they just feel like there's too much coming at them. And a lot of it is wonderful stuff, right? The web has, I mean, I want to consume it all. But the question was, I sort of put it out to my audience. At the end of the day, I had this feeling that I couldn't put it away, that I was shoving more and more and more into my brain, and yet I wasn't really sure what I was getting out of all the information that I was putting in there. So what we decided to do was do a week-long experiment to see that if we could be more purposeful about the information that we consumed, if we could set limits, set goals for ourselves, and say, I'm going to consume this information to get me closer to something, to do something with all the information I take in, would we feel better? Would that, you know, that weird eye twitch you get at night, like maybe it would stop? Would you sleep better? Would you feel like you actually, maybe if your goal was like to learn more Spanish, would you actually learn some Spanish at the end of it? Or we had these five goals. So what we heard was from people, their stories. One was like, I want to be better in better touch with my family. I want to actually use Facebook to reach out to people. So what we didn't ask people to do was turn it off. What we asked them to do was take these wonderful tools that you have and put them towards something that actually makes a difference in your life.
So what did you find was the most popular goal among all the goals?
Okay, so the most popular goal was to be more in tune with yourself, which I guess actually totally makes sense because for us, I think a lot of us go online, you know, speaking for myself, when I'm really tired or stressed at night, I go online and I go onto Pinterest and I scroll. And it's like this escapism, this like getting away from all the stress that I have. And so for a lot of people, I think they find that they turn to technology as a coping mechanism, and it doesn't always make them feel better, though. So for them, more in tune with yourself was the number one. More creative was the second one. And a lot of people were like, wait, what do you mean more creative? And like, I can't define that for you. So it was interesting. Some people were like, I'm going to look up really great recipes and then actually make the recipes. Other people were like, I've been working on a book. I have one more chapter. I am going to finish it and use tools like Freedom so that they shut down the web. But so there were so many different ways that people defined it. But those were our top two. More in tune with yourself, more creative. The other ones, the least favorite one was be more up to date on the news, which I guess we're in an election cycle. So maybe that makes sense, too.
Yeah, I was sad about that because we do a daily news show. So I'm like, oh, well, but it makes sense also because it can be anxiety provoking to stay up on all the news, depending on what news you're looking at.
But maybe if it's somebody who is like, you know, for example, my producer was like, I want to really be immersed in the tech that's going on so I can be more creative. So for her, consuming the news, tuning into all the twit that twit has to offer, that could be part of getting her to her goal of being more creative. I think it was however you defined it. But the idea was not just doing it because you always do it or because it's there. Really thinking like, okay, I'm about to go watch Twit. Does this fit into my goal? And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, okay, so not right now then, but maybe next week.
Right. Or if it's something like Pinterest that you were talking about before, like thinking about how it really makes you feel to spend time scrolling through Pinterest. To me, it makes me feel horrible because I'll never make that beautiful outdoor playhouse or, you know, I'm not married to Ryan Gosling.
No, but you know, if that was more in touch with yourself, maybe I don't even want to go there. Anyway.
Okay. Right. That's how Pinterest, sometimes makes me feel and I have to think about it. And you know, yes. Facebook too.
So my issue is couches, pages and pages of couches.
Yes. So did you do all the tasks?
Oh, I absolutely did. And I will say the number one task, which was day one, actually, and this really, we've heard from people that it stuck with them the most. It certainly has stuck with me the most. It was called single tasking. So you've heard of multitasking. This was single tasking. And we actually spoke to cognitive psychologists and neuroscientists who explained that, you know, maybe you've heard this, multitasking is a myth. Your brain cannot actually do multiple things at once. What you're doing is task switching. And when you do that, you use up what is actually a finite amount of neural resources. So think about it. If you open up email, should I read this email? Should I respond to this email? Should I respond now? Should I respond later? Should I archive it? Should I put it in a folder? Should I delete it? That's like seven decisions that you've just made there. And you're eating into, so that means like you might have used up all your like decision-making power by lunchtime and it won't even get you through the day. So whereas if you do one thing at a time, get it done, get it off your to-do list, we wanted to see, would you feel more clear? Would you feel like you actually did get more done? And what we heard from people was, I got fewer like little things done, but I actually accomplished, you know, writing that report that I had to finish by the end of the day. And actually people reported feeling much calmer and in a better state so that at the end of the day, back to Pinterest, they didn't turn to Pinterest. Maybe they actually talked to their spouse or they played a board game or maybe they watched a show, but they just watched a show. They didn't tweet at the same time. They made smarter choices that made them feel better and then hopefully sleep better at night.
Right. So, okay. So you had all these tasks that everyone was sort of doing together when you did this a few weeks ago. Can people still do them on their own?
Yeah, they totally can. And what was interesting was how we set up the system. We have a texting system. So every morning when you sign up, you can go to infomagical.org. When you sign up, if you choose to do it via text, this was something new that we tried out. We have your number and in the morning we text you with a link to the audio that explains the daily task, why we came up with this task, the science behind it, the tech behind it. And then a couple times during the week, we'll check in with you to see, you know, how's it going? Are you sticking with it? Can you rate yourself? Because in addition to helping people get, you know, fix their individual lives, we wanted to see on a broader scale, could we make change? Could we change the way people feel about fear of missing out? And we had 30,000 people sign up that first week. And so it was great to be able to look at the data that we collected from everyone because we asked people to rate every evening how it went and what was effective to them. And we did see that 71% of the people that made it through the entire week felt that they were better equipped to deal with information overload going forward, which was hugely gratifying that we could actually even make a tiny dent. I mean, look, did we fix it? No, this is an ongoing process. It is hard work. But I think what we did was make people aware of the myriad of choices we are being asked to make every single day with the gadgets that we have in our pockets, with the screens that we're looking at. And we need to take the time to make choices that actually matter to us instead of letting the people who make the gadgets or the people who want to sell us stuff, leaving the decision in their hands.
Well, I encourage people to go there. So you don't just do this. Every week you guys have a new episode that is about all different kinds of topics. And the most recent episode was about how we feel more productive, but we might not be more productive. And you talked to Douglas Rushkoff about many things. One was about Twitter, which I thought was fascinating, about everyone's expectations of them as a company. And we talk about Twitter a lot, probably more than people want to hear. Is it dead? Can it survive? but you two had an interesting take on the expectations of Twitter versus reality. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Doug is a media theorist and economist, and he writes, his latest book is Throwing Rocks at the Google Bus. And, you know, he was sort of saying, how have we gotten to this place where Twitter, which has $500 million in revenue every quarter, is considered an abject failure by Wall Street? And really, his point, what our discussion was about, was this idea that we are set up for constant growth. This is the economic system that we have created for ourselves, where these companies are backed by VC money and shareholders who expect 100 times the growth that they put in. And so something like Twitter, which actually I'm a huge Twitter fan, I like it the way it is. I kind of would be okay if it didn't grow, because maybe then it would retain some of its sort of wonderfulness that it has. But that's not okay for the shareholders. Mm-hmm. They want to see it grow exponentially. And so in the process, are we not only ruining some of these wonderful products that have been created, are we also setting ourselves up for lots of failure when it comes to these tech companies? And are we growing for the wrong reasons, only to appease the shareholders, not the users, and not even the people who work at these companies? So it's an interesting discussion, I think, that's going on, that really I think we have to think more about now, especially with this crazy election season that's going on. These are some of the reasons, this economic disparity, where why people are feeling the burn, why they're going for the Trump, right? Because there's this sense of, like, how do we keep going like this? The rich keep getting richer, and the rest of us, like, I'm sure busy every day, but maybe there's wage stagnation and your rent is going up. And there's this sense that, like, it's not sustainable.
Well, Manish, thank you so much for joining us. You guys should check out episodes on texting and sexting and wexting and all whatever word you're going to come up with next. There's so much more. It's at notetoselfradio.org, and you can get it at any podcast catcher. It's Note to Self. It's a tech show about being human. Manush Zomorodi at Manush Z on Twitter. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, many thanks to you and the Twit team for having me. It was really an honor.
I have no idea what wexting is.
It's walking and texting.
Oh.
Walking and texting.
That seems okay.
Did you know that, Steve?
No, you heard now that? I'm glad I do. I do that all the time. I'm totally guilty of wexting.
Have you ever gotten hurt?
No, not wexting, no.
Once it just sounds wrong to me, wexting.
And I wexed all the time. I wexed it on my way home today.
I wexed it on my way into work today. I'm afraid to admit. TNT's fan of the day is the dude that runs our prompter many days of the week. Yeah, Chris, who sent us this picture on Instagram. You may hear us sometimes talking to him during the show when we are pretending like we know what the younger generation likes about Snapchat. He actually knows, because he's a big-time user. He's usually the one over there shaking his head at us when we say things.
And he's in high school, too.
And he's in high school.
He knows what the kids these days do and talk about.
That's right. Thanks for keeping us honest, Chris. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself, or you set up and post it to Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat. Maybe Chris will find it there at hashtag HowIWatchTNT, and we're going to find it. All right, up next, is there really a way that you can save battery on your iPhone just by swiping apps away? We're going to talk about that. But first, let's thank the sponsor of this episode. That's the Ring Video Doorbell. I happen to have one right here. Not only do I have one right here, but I have one at my house. It's pretty awesome. And, you know, we're all familiar with the doorbell and the many wonderful things that come with the doorbell, right? What does it do? It tells you that a package is being delivered. It tells you that friends are coming over for dinner. People are waiting outside, and they don't know why you're not answering the door. It could also be the sound of someone planning to rob you. 95%, more than 95% of home break-ins happen during the day, and burglars almost always start by ringing your doorbell to see if someone's home before they break in and take your stuff. With the Ring Video Doorbell, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. You could do it from work. You could do it from, you know, the other side of the world, whatever, wherever you happen to be. Ring's advanced motion detection alerts you, even if someone doesn't ring the doorbell. With Ring Video Doorbell, you can talk to delivery people, see what they're dropping off, make sure that no one messes with it, get an instant alert and HD video If someone does mess with it, you get the whole thing. It's like having a neighbor keeping an eye on your home 24/7. Have it hooked up for Halloween, and you'll see when the kids come to your house and they dump the entire bowl of candy into their bag, as they did at my house. I have them on video. I know who did it. I'm going to do nothing with that information, but at least I know. Installing Ring takes minutes, and it works with either your current wiring or a built-in rechargeable battery, which is actually what we use. Put your mind at ease and protect your home with the video doorbell that Time Magazine and USA Today named one of their top 10 gadgets. Go to ring.com/TNT for free expedited FedEx shipping. That's ring.com/TNT. With Ring, you're always home, even when you're recording Tech News Today.
Okay, so those kids are going to get older, and you might be able to use that video. Hang on to it.
Okay,
hang
I will. On to it. They one knew of, they were doing. Them... They knew what they were doing was wrong, though. I could tell because when they were like dumping it into their bag, they're like all looking around, all sneaky and stuff.
Maybe they'll have the right to be forgotten law.
I don't know. I don't even know if I have the video anymore. I think okay, I just good. Laughed at it right. And then moved on.
Well, if you are anything like me, when you're trying to save your battery life on your phone, you swipe to close all the open programs. And if you're anything like me, you've been wasting your time for a really long time. Steve, Business Insider reports that open programs aren't really running, that open programs are not really running and they don't waste your battery. Is this true? I've been wasting my time?
Yeah, this is something that you see people doing. We've written about this multiple times, and we wrote about it again today because supposedly someone emailed Craig Federighi, who's the head of software over at Apple, and supposedly he replied back saying, you don't need to do that. That's because iOS has this app management feature built in, so it kind of puts in apps like a suspended animation state so they don't drain your battery when you're not using them. But for some reason, this myth just keeps getting spread that you have to close those apps in order to save your battery life. It really does nothing. The only time I ever close my apps are if, you know, one gets hung up and starts freezing or acting a little janky, then I'll close it out. But yeah, we made that little gif too. We wrote about this, man, well over a year or two ago, and we had a good excuse to write about it again now that we have confirmation from the guy in charge of iOS himself. So
yeah, I think
don't worry about closing our apps.
Okay, good. I've just gotten so many time hours back to my life. Thank you. Yeah, I think this customer just wrote a letter, I think an email to Tim Cook, and then Craig Federighi replied to it. Yeah, okay. I guess he gets Tim's emails or some of them, the ones that you just send, that a random person sends to Tim Cook.
Everybody in Apple gets your email if you send it to Tim. Everybody gets
what's
it.
What's that about? The secret, you know, they all laugh at you. But then you send an email to Tim Cook and someone's allowed to post that on the internet?
I remember actually back in 2010, and probably before that, but I remember there was a string of stories that you would see regularly about how somebody just randomly emailed Steve Jobs a question. Steve Jobs decided to answer them, sometimes with a one-word answer, sometimes with more, but it's just that kind of strange situation where you put something out, you expect nothing to happen, and then you wake up in the morning and you've got an email from Steve Jobs or Craig Federighi in this case.
So with Android, same thing? You don't need to
Actually, it's a little bit different. And I'm wondering if maybe this is part of the kind of confusion, because Android does have a multitasking view of all of your recent apps that are open. And they do say that those are apps that in one way or another, if you swipe it away, if it's super recent, you're kind of letting go of that process and removing it, and that it can actually result in some sort of improvements to your OS. I don't, you know, but it's still kind of one of those things. It's really hard to tell. Like, I don't do it, and I feel like my phone runs fine. Every once in a while, when things aren't running fine, I do it, and I don't necessarily notice that my phone is suddenly running better. So, who knows if it's just kind of a myth or really happening, but... Yeah.
What's your feeling on tabs, Steve? I have 764 open. Oh, is that?
I am so anal about my tabs. I close it as soon as I'm finished with it. My one coworker, Katie Thompson, she's like you. I mean, you can't even see a single letter or an icon, and because she has so many tabs open on.
I couldn't.
But no,
do that.
I think I have four open right now. Two of my emails, TweetDeck, and the rundown for the show. That's all I have open right now. I'm pretty good.
So is that a tidiness thing, or do you think it's speeding up your?
It's a tidiness thing. No, I don't think that. Chrome, it doesn't matter. You can have one tab open or a million tabs open, and Chrome is just going to eat all the memory in your computer anyway. So
it'll just distribute it more evenly.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't do that. Like, my brain just doesn't function when I've got too many tabs open. So yeah. I keep it trimmed down as needed.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for the whole episode, Steve. I know it's late there, and you already told us about Tech Insider, and we know about Business Insider. Is there anything else that you're working on that you can talk about?
The Tech Insider, we're 8 or 9 months into the site now, and I mean, it's just growing like crazy. So it's really, it's my first time launching something brand new. So it's really exciting to experiment and play around and try to do something in the same vein and the same tone as Business Insider, but like with a different subject matter.
Sure.
So it's just, it's been a blast so far. So I'm really enjoying it. So I hope you guys check by every day, because we're doing some really cool stuff.
Excellent. And of course, you'll be on Twit March 20th. So look forward to that.
Day before the Apple.
In the studio.
All right. Yep. Well, Alexa, was Steve a good guest?
Huh?
Was he? Alexa, don't hold She's out gonna... on us now.
Oh, I got the boom. Well, whatever, Alexa.
She heard you. She knows you returned her to the store. She heard you say that. And
but I returned it to Amazon.
To the Amazon.
This is payback.
I was going to ask you this question before, and I'll ask you before you go. You review a lot of products. Are there any products that you returned that you felt sad about, like you felt sad about, Alexa?
I'm trying to think. Recently, I think I will feel bad when I send back the Galaxy S7. I really like this phone. Jason, you've probably played with this already.
I actually have it here. I've been playing with it for a couple of days. Yeah, really
nice. Amazing phone. I mean, it's awesome. I'm going to be sad to part with this thing when I have to send it back. But I've had it for a little over a week or so, I guess, now, and I'm obsessed with it. I think it's easily the best Samsung phone, probably the best Android phone. So yeah, that's probably my choice right now.
Yeah, it's pretty fantastic. Just be careful with it. Leo has already cracked the back of his.
Really?
Somehow. Oh, I don't know how. But yeah, and then I've seen some pretty nasty scratches on Florence Ion's screen. She says she does not, you know, she reviews a lot of devices. She's very careful with them. So I'm wondering about durability because of those two incidences, but it is a really nice phone.
Oh, I love this thing.
Yeah.
Don't drop it.
Don't drop it.
All right. Take care, Steve.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care. Have a good night. All right. Tomorrow's guest will be David Spark from Spark Media Solutions. He's actually going to be in studio sitting right here. Maybe we'll move the TV. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
He'll keep Alexa.
We'll leave Alexa there right in front of him.
Yeah.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can always take part in the show by emailing us, even if you're saying things that are, you know, correcting us or whatever. We like all of your words. Send them to us, tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
And this is the time in the show where I like to thank you for sticking around to the bitter end of this show. And thank you for subscribing. You haven't subscribed. If you haven't subscribed, go to twit.tv/TNT. Subscribe now. It's free.
Whoa.
It's totally free. And you can always email me directly at megan@twit.tv or tweet me a direct message or a regular tweet. I am at Megan Maroney.
And I am at Jason Howell. You don't get my email address, though. Thanks to our technical director, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We will see you tomorrow. Oh, thanks, Alexa. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.